It's almost time for the bells. The armistice of 1918 ended the terrible slaughter of World War I. The U.S. alone had experienced the death of over 116,000 soldiers, plus many more who were affected physically, mentally, spiritually. For one moment, at the 11th hour on the 11th day of the 11th month, the world agreed World War I must be considered the war to end all wars. There was exuberant joy everywhere, and many churches rang their bells, some 11 times at 11 a.m. on November 11th, when the armistice was signed. For many years, this practice endured, and then slowly it faded away. And now, with the support of advocacy from Veterans for Peace, we do it again. We ring the bells, our bell, 11 times, followed by a moment of silence to remember the many soldiers and civilians killed and injured by warfare, and to make our own commitment to work for peace in our family, in our church, our community, our nation, our world. Our reflections are going to begin with Diana Scheel. I'll invite her up.
My name's Diana. Can you hear me? Is this loud enough? More towards me?
There. Oh. Yeah, hear that. Okay.
A little context. Linda sent me some questions that asked me to reflect on these questions, but not these questions, because other things came up. But to kind of give you a context, they were: how to reconcile liberal faith with military service? What is it like to be a person of liberal faith while serving? Patriotism, why isn't it considered a liberal value in public discourse? What called you to serve? So some of you know I'm a military veteran, United States Army Nurse Corps. I went enlisted in 1970 and retired in 2002. And was not in combat, but was in service during the first Gulf War, and we were assigned to Germany, where we prepared to, with reservists, prepared to receive thousands of casualties. And the biggest concern was chemical warfare from that war. In terms of faith and religion, I was confirmed a Lutheran, the more liberal side of the Lutheran faith. My dad was an Episcopalian, my mother was a Lutheran, and although I would not consider us to have been a religious family. My beliefs evolved, and I no longer was a Christian, and then I moved to Portland. I think that one followed the other one fairly logically. But I became a member of the First Church downtown, And I think I'm still officially on their rolls, but I was walking down the street and saw this sign for this congregation, and walked in, and two people embraced me, Linda and Diane, you know who you are. So that's my background. I'm married to Steve Shield, who's here today for the very first time. He's a Navy veteran. His claim to fame is being on the helicopter landing ship that recovered Apollo 13. So we have a religious ceremony in our house every year when we watch, what was his name? Tom Hanks, recreate that experience. But I'd like to talk about the founders of this country. The founders of this country knew that it was absolutely imperative that we separate religion from state, religion from government. And it's everybody's individual responsibility and right to have their own faith, whether it be liberal or conservative or a number of things in between. When I raised my right hand in 1970, the oath contained the words, I swear, so help me God. By the time I left the service, that was changed to, I affirm that I will affirm that I will support and defend the Constitution of the United States. My entire career was based on the concept of teamwork. Army values are loyalty, duty, respect, integrity, personal courage, and selfless service. And I never recall a conversation when we added Republican or Democrat or Independent to that conversation. Chaplains in the military are trained and volunteer to be chaplains to everybody, agnostic, atheist, Buddhist, anybody who has the need for comfort or spiritual support. Those chaplains were some of the most incredible people in the world. There was no proselytizing. There was no, well, I'm a Lutheran, therefore you should convert to my faith. Why are you in the military? I'm your chaplain. I'm going to teach you the right way. Never was did I hear or participate in that. Services were held, and then you were, which were mostly Christian, but there were Jewish and Muslim services as well. But it was very individual and very private and very separated from what you were there for. Patriotism seems to have been hijacked by conservatives who somehow equated being a liberal to being anti-war, anti-military, anti-service. No one who has served in a combat zone or in the military or anything associated with that, even ROTC, who wanted to go to war. Nobody wants to go to war. It's an illogical thing. But if you look at how our Constitution is structured, our leaders are civilians. Our leaders are not the king, the president of a republic in the Eastern Bloc. There are checks and balances on that. And those of you who have served, and if you have served, would you raise your hand? Know that there is there is such a thing as an illegal order. People have this concept in their mind that military people are lockstep into what their sergeants or colonels or presidents tell them. That is not true. So when our president talks about imagining that the people throwing stones across the border are holding rifles, all of his military leaders stood up and said, "Sir, that is an illegal order." And everyone in the military is taught from Private One on up what an illegal order is, and that it's your duty to disobey that. But I'd like to end on a more positive note, a more modern note, I guess I should say. Service in the military is now voluntary. During the Vietnam War, there was a draft. And that draft was eliminated, and now we have an all-volunteer force. I'm a member of that all-volunteer force, although I had a scholarship to go to nursing school. And some of my instructors were Vietnam era nurses. But what has happened since we've had a all volunteer force is that there's been an increasing disconnect between civilian citizens and former military citizens. There's been a lack of understanding about these very difficult issues. What's an illegal order? You know, why are you in the service? If you are, if you're in the military, that must mean you want to go to war. Now, why do most people enlist nowadays in the military?
Good job and an education.
It's only been recently that, in our long history, that the military have been compensated for their career. In terms of having retirement pay and benefits and hospital care and so forth. So because a number of our officials, more and more of our officials have had no experience in a war or serving in the military, there was a time there when I think that was detrimental to the entire country. And now we're seeing more elected officials who've had experience in the military who understand that if we did not have a military, there's a good chance that we would all be red of a different color origin. And so we have to defend ourselves, and we need to have a trained, smart military to do that. Decisions can be made down at the sergeant level because our troops are highly trained and educated. I'm biased, I know that, but so I have long supported a return to not a draft, but a concept that many countries around the world have embraced, and that's service to the country. Service to the country doesn't have to mean you carry a rifle. You could be in the public health service. Anybody here old enough to remember the CCC? Mabel? Yes, yes. Projects. Do we have an infrastructure project now, a problem now? Mm-hmm. Yes. Those 1930 bridges are crumbling. So let's all think about military service and patriotism from a different perspective. And I'll end with a quote from something that I thought I would never see, but the first African-American president who said, "Loving your country shouldn't just mean watching fireworks on the 4th of July. Loving your country must mean accepting your responsibility to do your part to change it. If you do, your life will be richer and our country will be stronger." Barack Obama. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Diana, for your story. I guess I want to start with a preface. My name is Linda McPherson, and I have never served in the military. But I spent a lot of time reflecting on this service and had some thoughts that I felt like it were important for me to explore and share with you. And this idea of service to country is a huge thing for me, and I think us, as we think about our role in the world and in shaping it into what we want it to be. I remember vividly the day my brother, my baby brother, told me that he had decided to sign a 6-year commitment to the Marine Corps. It was the spring of 1991, and he had at that point spent nearly 2 years as a volunteer, not on a scholarship, in ROTC, and one summer at Officer Candidate School. So to him, it was a careful and considered decision. I waited until we were on a long drive together to ask him to share with me why he had chosen to do this. He explained that he was drawn to the camaraderie and structure of the Marines. He was successful there in ways he had never been in high school, and he felt that he had found his calling as a leader of men. I, my 21, 22-year-old self, felt compelled to ask if he had considered that he was taking a job where it would come to pass that his primary responsibility would be to kill other young men just like him, with sisters and families just like him. My brother retired recently with 20 years of service as a lieutenant colonel, and the military did indeed give him all those things that he had hoped for. However, in 2 tours on the Middle East, one in Iraq and one in Afghanistan, it also gave him the responsibility I feared most. He was shot at, shot back, lost soldiers under his command, and was clearly responsible for the deaths of some of his enemy combatants who had families and sisters just like him. When the worship committee noted that this Sunday fell directly on Veterans Day, and as it turns out, the 100th anniversary of Armistice Day, we thought it was worthy of our time and attention as a congregation. Since we made that decision, I've been turning this topic over and over and over in my head. My personal internal struggle keeps coming back to a few questions. How do I personally reconcile my absolute core value in the inherent worth and dignity of every single person on this planet with the reality that mankind have been fighting each other for power or land or resources since always? And why is it, or when did it come to be, that patriotism is somehow all wrapped up in the need for defense and fighting? I want to be clear here that as a student of history and politics, I acknowledge the importance of maintaining a military that is prepared to put down true tyranny. I also truly honor and respect those like my brother and Diana and so many others who feel that call to serve for all of us in this capacity. However, I also strive, perhaps idealistically, for a world that is guided first by the values of love, peace, liberty, and justice for all people. I want to find a way to wrap that value up in a flag and proclaim it loudly. As people of both liberal faith and political persuasion, it is imperative that we find a way to do just this. To me, did this just go out?
Yeah.
Wonder if it's out of batteries. I will try and project. To me, or
just, we'll come up here.
To me, it feels like the world today is moving farther and farther in a direction where more and more people define things as us versus them and feel separate and different from their other, whomever that might be.
I would note that it is so much easier for individuals, let alone governments, to make choices to kill when the other is not the same as good as, or is more evil than we are. Since the change in leadership in this country, I have felt compelled to hang our American flag on the front of our house on all the appropriate holidays, including today, because I want to honor and respect the values that this country aspires to. And damn it, patriotism is not a conservative value. I'm reminded, in reflecting on this topic, of the words of Lao Tzu, that if there is to be peace in the world, it must begin with peace in our hearts, our homes, our neighbors, our cities, and of course our nations. But today, that peace is in my home, and I feel it in my community here, but I would not describe this as a time of peace in our nation. So I'm left with one final question on this topic. How do I build peace? How do we build it? I don't have the answer to this question, but I earnestly believe, perhaps need to believe, that each and every one of us has a duty to serve by letting all of our actions and our words be guided by the moral values of peace, love, and liberty and justice for all people, even those we ardently disagree with. And that is how the arc of the universe will bend in the direction of peace.
Thank you. And Noel Poole, this is coming back maybe, will share a final reflection.
Okay, give me my table. I need my stick for balance. Okay, I wasn't sure exactly when I would come along. And I have a loud voice, so I don't think I need much of anything else. And I would rather stand than sit.
Okay.
But I can put my little book on it. Okay, and you want to know what I think it is? American Fascism, a Memoir by Will Poole. Okay, and I keep saying to myself, Niat stupai, don't digress. And I hear these other people and I'm tempted to regress so far. All right, the first thing that I have to do is call on my wife, Mabel, to stay with us. Mabel, how often growing up in the 1930s did you ever hear of anyone getting shot?
Never.
Never. None of us ever heard of anyone getting shot in the 1930s. Okay, so I won't digress. What the hell happened? Where did we lose our moral turpitude and get all this violence? Virtually a mass shooting every single day. When did we lose it? I can tell you right on the spot. You ought to know too. When did we lose it? August 6, 1945. What happened?
Pearl Harbor?
Hiroshima. You're damn right. That's moral turpitude. Robert J. Lifton, an outstanding, same age I am, but an outstanding psychologist who's written so many books and so on, wrote a book entitled Hiroshima, 50 Years of Denial. Here we have it today. Hiroshima, 63 years of denial, descended into a moral turpitude. All issues are moral, whether you care to face it or not. They're what we live by. Okay, so I'm going to say a few things about World War II. Don't ever thank me for it. I was just a dumb teenage kid. World War II was fought by teenage kids. The average age at Normandy was 19. Why 19? Why kids? Because older men would have known what was expected of them was impossible. Now that's the leadership that we have. Okay, by the way, I owe an awful lot to my mentor, who is Kurt Vonnegut. If you haven't read Slaughterhouse-Five, one of the strongest messages for peace in med school. And I must confess, I am a member of Veterans for Peace, Chapter 72. And this is what I intend to, what I feel we should all be devoting our lives to. All right, first of all, about this day, Veterans Day. That is an utter corruption. I mentioned that before. This ended World War I. This is Armistice Day, the day that was to end all wars, to end all wars. This is what it's about. It's not about military flyovers or parades and so on. It's about peace. So this is what we have to dedicate ourselves for and fight for. Don't ever thank me for my service. I was a dumb teenage kid, just like all the rest of them, going out and doing what I had no idea of what it is. All right, I'm going to end with President, our good president, who called it the way it is. What he does consistently is ask for military expenditures, increasing them. And what he said about it was, well, if we don't increase the military expenditure, we lose thousands of jobs. What determines our entire existence is the military-industrial complex. It provides the hegemony by which we live every day of our lives, and we must confront it. Thank you for your time. I've got a half a dozen of these with me if any of you wish a copy.
Thank you, Will and Diana.
Mr. Poole,
for the question.
Well, wasn't it General Eisenhower retired that said that?
Yes.
Yeah, it could well be. Eisenhower is the best example of a military industrial complex at work. The Dulles brothers, he put down the overthrew the democratic government of Guatemala. Tens of thousands were killed. That was because the president of Guatemala wanted to nationalize more land. He was going to buy it back from United Fruit Corporation. They were paying 3% of the value in their taxes, and he was going to pay them what they'd been paying for taxes. And we could cite Mossadegh, the overthrow of Mossadegh under Eisenhower, all the consequences. Eisenhower is a full-fledged product of it. The other thing I didn't mention was George C. Marshall, the impeccable character who would not even vote in elections, run for them. And the one exception was when Truman decided that he would recognize the State of Israel against all advice. The Arabs looked for us for justice and so on. And they didn't get it. Instead, they got Israel so that Truman could get a trunk full of money to run for re-election, and he won.
Will,
I'm forced.
You should know that Will's book, he's not getting profit from it. He paid for it,
but it's donations to the peace, Veterans for Peace.
All right, thank you.